I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, gospel sensation Kirk Franklin revolutionized the music scene with his unique blend of gospel and hip-hop. Now the newly published author tells us what's playing in his ear. But first, in the world of independent film, writer, producer, and director Haile Gerima is a giant. Born in Ethiopia, educated at the center of the American film industry at UCLA, but based in Washington, D.C. for nearly 30 years, he's defied nearly every convention of the American film industry and still has managed to make and distribute complex, sometimes disturbing films focusing on people of color around the world and addressing issues of displacement and oppression. You can catch his latest film this month in Detroit, then Minneapolis next month, and Santa Monica as well. It's called Teza, and it might be his most personal film yet. And Haile Gerima is with us now from our Washington, D.C. studios. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I understand that this film took quite a while to make. Do I have that right? More than a decade?
Yes.
Tell us how the idea originated with you.
The seed idea of the story really began when I first left my country when I was 21, coming to Chicago to go to the Goodman School of Drama. And that is the anxiety of leaving home, specifically my family, my friends, and then coming to a country that I was kind of a little bit scared to come to, although I was very anxious to come and through a scholarship. I was just a student who worked his way to school.
I'll just give a little bit of a synopsis of the plot. It's a story about, how does he, Anberber?
Anberber, yeah.
Anberber, he's a young, educated man. He studies in Germany in the 80s, and then he later returns home after the fall of Emperor Haile Selassie to help his country grow. But he comes in the middle of political turmoil. The Marxist regime is about to take over, and he has to kind of find his way through this. And the story is told in backwards and forward in time. And tell me about the title. It means...
Teza means really morning dew.
Morning dew.
Yeah, and it has a lot to do with memory, where I was a little boy outside the house coming in contact with the morning dew. The whole puzzle of the story is based on this, trying to find that little water, driplets of water, back when he was a child.
And that sense of hope and optimism.
Yes.
And the story travels from Ethiopia and home and to Germany, where Anberber is studying and trying to make a life. I just want to play a short clip because it talks both about the turmoil at home and what one faces overseas. And it talks about the fact that the journey of the immigrant is not always an easy one, particularly when there's a racial difference or a cultural difference. And the clip I want to play speaks to that. This is a scene where Anberber and his friends, who are both German and Ethiopian, who've gathered together, and there's a couple, and that they share some important news.
We have an announcement to make.
Everybody, Gabby's pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't know how our family are going to take it, but...
She's okay with it.
We are pregnant.
Excuse me, Tim. Are you okay with it?
Who, me? I guess if she's okay with it, it's all right by me. It's her choice.
We want it. We are progressive. The only problem we have is my family. But we both want it. We are fine with it. We are progressive.
Don't give me that progressive. Forget about your parents. What about you too? You seem completely unprepared.
What? They know what they're doing.
You can't just happily make children, ignoring the racist society the children have to face sooner or later.
Who asked for your opinion?
Why are you so emotional about it?
Where do you people think you are? This is Germany. Do you know how a black child is going to feel in this white society? Have you ever thought about this once?
Tell me about this.
Many Americans do not know that my generation, a lot of the Ethiopians and Africans in general, I'm sure Latin Americans, were sent abroad by the kind of arrangement of the Kennedy-Eisenhower period and Emperor Haile Selassie, and the idea of modernization in the midst of all this social communist and capitalism struggle. In that midst, intellectuals are sent, and then they go into a human relationship. And then this paramount mortgaged idea of going back home makes them somewhat walk over human beings. Mm. And so it's really written to say when we go into relationships, especially in Europe and in America, and we don't take it seriously, we leave our children vulnerable to a kind of racist structure that could defeat them
There are some who would argue this is old news. It's different now, really, with globalization. There are people all over the world working and having relationships, falling in love.
I'll tell you, it's not necessarily so. Even Obama, as a result of, for example, the mission, that the period of his father is really the period we're talking about in this film. But I don't think the African side is ever told. The African intellectual, what he or she is thinking about, is never a movie. It's never a story. It's not even in a novel. And that's why I was hungered to tell this story, because for me, this displacement, everybody looks at foreigners only as just devoted immigrants. The turmoil of your body being here, your brain at home where you grew up, has never been in movies. Oftentimes, in fact, Africans, we're just disposable materials in European love stories. For example, there would be a German nurse and two American male news people. They meet in Africa, and the rest of our we're background. In this film, you see Africans in the forefront telling their story, however awkward that story, imperfect that story is. Even my story, I can't claim I told it. I just did a strand of it.
I'm interested in this, though, how you have maintained the passion for telling that story, for putting, you know, the African experience, the interior world in the forefront. I mentioned in our introduction that you've defied all these conventions. All independent filmmakers struggle, and you couldn't distribute or found that it was hard to distribute your film, so you created a distribution company. And you still kind of do things your own way. You don't even have a cell phone, for example, which I find really funny. But I'm interested in how you have kept at it.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I think I have analyzed my historical placement thanks to the, you know, for example, the African-American community that actually really created me or encouraged me to be a filmmaker when I first began. I never knew I had the right to tell stories. As an African, I thought I was just a spectator. But even that realization and that kind of support base has always made me feel that it can be done, although it takes many years. And the other thing is, I do not have to be the cliche of what filmmakers are. There's a major debate in the African-American community. To this day, African-Americans do not author, really, their own story. Therefore, there's always a fight in the community, pro and against, all the schism that goes on, because the idea of coming from birthing the story to the fruition of the story is a luxury for Black people in America. So for me, I've been able to just inch along and be satisfied with whatever I achieve. It takes me 14 years to make a film. If that's my historical reality, I take it with pleasure and use that placement and historical circumstance to my advantage.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm visiting with renowned filmmaker Haile Gerima. He has introduced his latest film, Teza, and we're talking about his work and his latest film. There's some beautiful scenes of Ethiopia. I think they're just delicious and elegant to observe, and there's some beautiful scenes of childhood and children playing, and there are childhood games, which I think... But I think it's... Is it fair to say that in your films you're attracted to the pain side of the ledger, of the human experience?
Would that be fair? No, it will not be fair. You know why? I'm just not part of those filmmakers and artists who protect the privileged people from stories that happens to people every day. I don't want to be a liar storyteller to make sure I comfort the audience. So for me, my preoccupation is not the audience, because if there was the audience, I would just do a pornographic film. So for me, the fact that I make this kind of films is I don't want to join this deceptive planet we are creating, where a privileged society is created at the expense of everybody that is suffering.
Okay, but nobody's under subpoena to see your films. I mean,
well,
they have to choose to
thank
go.
Thank you. And I'm glad. And when they come, they will not find a person that tries to go out of his way to entertain them at the expense of stories and themes.
Do you ever think, though, that your work... I know you've expressed frustration in some of your interviews, in previous interviews that I have read, where you've expressed some frustration of the fact that you've been so much lauded. I cannot name all of the honors that have been accorded you, because that would be our whole interview. But you've expressed some frustration that your work has not been more widely seen. And I just wonder, do you ever think, well, perhaps if I lightened up a bit, that perhaps I might have a wider audience?
No, never? When I was a student, I came during the Vietnam War. And the idea at that time was really, how do we best tell our story? Not only the story, but the aesthetics of the story. How do we frame our story? Should we all join the formula cinema of three act that Hollywood spearheads, or continue to experiment and transform our own narrative temperament? They mean a lot to me. So the only frustration I have is the lack of access to equal, on equal terms, or the lack of access, the material access that for example, for marketing movies, is basically if I had in my story, saying the same story, but I had principal characters of white people or European descendants, I will not have a problem. I would have a distribution that would not be too hostile, too alien to my story. So,
are you encouraged at all by the success of a film like Precious, which was released last year? It was a big Hollywood film. I mean, it won a number of awards from the Academy and is also a very challenging subject. Does that encourage you?
No, it is, because I don't know. First, I haven't seen this film. And second, I don't think one movie, if we go for one movie, Sounder would have done it also. You can go historically, black people continue to be gullible to one movie. But the system in general, in the way it's organized, it does not greenlight the diversity of black stories. It only amplifies the story it fathoms or that appeases its own imagination. So until you give me black people can in the industry have a variety of stories, like white people, dumb, stupid, and brilliant movies. There is no movie for black people except whatever white America greenlights. It's a very white supremacist industry, and nobody challenged that industry.
Well, wait a minute. But Precious was based on a novel by an African-American woman, directed by an African-American man, produced by two African-Americans, Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey.
Well, I'm not sure.
Opened, I mean, $18 million in one weekend.
I will tell you, I think it will bring more, and I think other black films have brought money also. But what I'm saying is, in general, in the way the industry is organized, you cannot give me, by the testimony of most black filmmakers in panel discussion, you cannot give me a black green lighter in the industry who green lights black stories without it being compromised to be primarily comedic. It's not accidental that we have Barbershop 1, Barbershop 2, Barbershop 20 and 30 and 40 would go. Booty Call will go on. And now and then there will be some escapist films. But in general, when you speak about cultural diet of a people, I think it will be normalized the minute choices start to appear. We don't discuss normally on movies. We discuss like attorneys pro and against and fight like hell. Even on Precious, the reason I don't want to join the Precious debate is I've seen it since the past 30, 40 years. Black people will have a piece of meat and they want to kill each other, when in fact, if there were more movies, Precious would just be one of the movies. And I'm just saying it should be normal to do all kinds of stories. That is not too much to ask in my view.
So what's next for you?
Oh, another 14 years to find money to do my next movie.
What's
with pleasure.
It's not going to be Barbershop 23, so
it's never going to be that. There's enough of that. I just want to do something else.
What, do you know what it's going
to
be?
Well, I have one I want to do in Washington, D.C. called Chicken Bone Express, for example, and that is about black folks who came from the South in the inner cities of Washington, D.C. named Reagan, and how that period created so much schism between the grandkids and the value of these folks who came from the South for a better situation.
Well, hopefully it won't take 14 years.
Well, me too. I would like to, but I don't have also, unless a lotto hits me, you know, I'm where I am.
Okay. Haile Gerima is a renowned director, screenwriter, producer. His latest film was called Teza, and he was kind enough to join us from our studios in Washington, D.C. To see a list of the cities where Teza is playing, please go to Tell Me More's website on the program page at npr.org. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having me.